KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem is likely headed to Washington for a cabinet position, tribal leaders are calling for a reset in state-tribal relations. That came during an annual tribal address at the legislature. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger has more.
Chairman Garrett Renville of the Sisseton Wahpeton Tribe says the state of South Dakota is in the midst of an historic moment. In addition to changes for Governor Noem, the U.S. Senate is led by a South Dakotan, Republican John Thune. Renville says the state's lone congressman, Dusty Johnson, is working well in a divided U.S. House of Representatives.
South Dakota is now literally at the center of the political universe. We have an opportunity now to bring about real change for our people and at all levels of government, but we must work together.
Renville says state-tribal relations have hit a series of breakdowns in government-to-government engagement. That came following comments by Governor Noem alleging Mexican drug cartels were operating out of reservations.
Today, let's reset. Today, let's rebuild. Today, let's start to listen and actually hear.
Renville points to areas where the state and tribes have worked together, including on a resolution in 2024 urging Congress to address law enforcement shortages on tribal lands. He's urging the state to pass another resolution, having Congress rescind the Dakota Removal Act. Renville and other tribal leaders met with Governor Noem and Lieutenant Governor Larry Roden earlier this week. Roden is next in line to become governor when Noem resigns her seat. Standing Rock Chairwoman Janet Alkier also attended the meeting. She says they talked with Noem about having a tribal law enforcement training center in the northern part of the country. That training takes place in New Mexico.
That's one of the things that we wanted to visit with her. We believe that if we had someplace up here up north, rather than sending all our folks down south, a lot of times they don't last. I think it locally is much better.
Alkier says she's also looking forward to working with Lieutenant Governor Roden, who is a West River rancher, when he becomes governor. I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre.
As Senate hearings continue this week for President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet picks, tribal leaders are among those closely watching. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin issued a statement Wednesday expressing his support for former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. Burgum has been nominated to lead the Department of the Interior. A California tribe is celebrating after the Biden administration greenlit its petition to put land into trust for a casino north of San Francisco. As Jacob Resnick reports, that approval comes despite objections from neighboring tribes and many of the state's political leaders.
The Koi Nation of Northern California applauded the U.S. Department of the Interior's decision on Monday to put 68 acres into trust for the Shiloh Resort and Casino in northern Sonoma County. The decision follows a federal judge rebuffing attempts by a neighboring tribe to block the development. In a statement, Darian Beltran, chair of the Koi Nation Tribal Council, said the federal government's approval fills the tribe's hearts with promise and hope. But neighboring tribes, including the Federated Indians of Grayton Rancheria, which operates a casino complex 15 miles south of the site, has called the project a travesty as it's outside the Koi Nation's ancestral lands in a neighboring county. California Governor Gavin Newsom also had urged the Biden administration to reject the casino project that includes more than 100 table games, 2,700 slots, and a 400-room hotel. Once completed, the Koi have signed an agreement with the Chickasaw Nation of Oklahoma to manage the casino and resort. I'm Jacob Resnick in Sonoma County, California.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com. educators. Ready to transform Indigenous education? The NISN School Design Fellowship is accepting community letters of interest through January 31st at NACAInspiredSchoolsNetwork.org, who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
We all have to agree that we must undertake activities in this incredible area with due consideration as to how they may impact subsistence resources.
President Biden's administration issues new protections for the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, January 16th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, a proposed law would help Alaskans insure their homes for flood damage and some landslides.
They're getting ripped off by the federal government on flood insurance. They're getting an economic shotgun held to their head on how they can rebuild their properties. That's frankly unfair.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
The Biden administration has issued interim management instructions aimed at protecting subsistence resources in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. It's not clear if anything in the guidelines from the Interior Department will survive the transition to the Trump administration. Acting Deputy Interior Secretary Laura Daniel Davis told reporters today that the new measures stem from more than 80,000 public comments the department received about the reserve, which she referred to as the Western Arctic. Daniel Davis says no matter what happens next, it was the right thing to do.
We know we're in these seats for a few more days, and the next team may have a different perspective on how we manage public lands, including in the Western Arctic. But I think really we all have to agree that we must undertake activities in this incredible area with due consideration as to how they may impact subsistence resources that we are today identifying as a significant resource value.
The department is also proposing to expand the inventory of special areas in the reserve by about 3 million acres. The National Petroleum Reserve is a tract of federal land as large as the state of Indiana. It includes important habitat for migratory birds and wildlife. It also has substantial oil and gas potential. The Biden administration approved a major ConocoPhillips project there called Willow, but Senator Lisa Murkowski says it's burdened the reserve with too many restrictions, and she's counting the days until the department is in new hands. She had the opportunity today to question the person nominated to be the next Secretary of Interior. Doug Burgum said at his confirmation hearing that he wants to be Alaska's partner in resource development.
I would view Alaska as one of the biggest assets this country has and one of the biggest responsibilities of Interior, and look forward to working with you.
That's exactly what I was hoping you would say.
Burgum appears to have enough Senate votes for confirmation. He's a former governor of North Dakota. He has some familiarity with the 49th state. He said at a 2017 press conference that in 1976, he hitchhiked to Alaska. Meanwhile, small businesses in Alaska are bracing for the Supreme Court to rule on a law that would ban TikTok in the United States. TikTok is owned by the Chinese company ByteDance, and many critics worry the Chinese government could gain access to user data, control content, and say the app is a national security risk. Others argue the ban is unconstitutional because it would violate free speech. Last spring, President Biden signed a law that allows the government to ban foreign-owned apps that threaten national security. If TikTok isn't sold by Sunday, it faces a nationwide ban. Alaska Public Media's Ava White spoke with Small Business Development Center Executive Director John Bittner about the potential ban.
When the government decides to sort of take down an entire platform like this, it has longer-term implications. I understand sort of the security concerns on some level, but a lot of businesses, both in and out of Alaska, have invested a lot of time and effort into building their followings on these platforms. And if they can just disappear overnight, you can't take those with you. It's a big problem. And it's not like there's just an easy pivot. You can't just say, well, TikTok is just the same as Facebook or X. They're disparate programs, platforms with disparate audiences. And for that to disappear this quickly, I think it's going to have some pretty interesting implications going forward. Just because you understand one platform doesn't mean you can be as effective on another platform. So it's, I mean, some people are going to get demonetized just in general, unfortunately.
I've been on the app for several years, I think since it started, and I've seen several small businesses essentially blow up from the app. Can you talk a little bit about how small businesses in Alaska utilize not just TikTok, but social media overall to boost business?
I mean, in Alaska in particular, social media is such an effective and sort of low barrier entry way to market your business, to showcase your products, to connect more sort of organically with your clients and customers. In the past, it was big marketing firms, smoke-filled rooms, you know, logos, branding. Today, it's people want to know who you are that's behind the business, and that's not really achievable in traditional media. I think there's still a role for traditional media, but social media is especially if you're a small business, so much more effective, impactful, and cheaper. And so we're seeing, you know, in terms of TikTok, a lot of the sort of visually impressive businesses, the tourism businesses, the food businesses, the even the influencers. We have quite a few of those up here. That's a viable business model. And so for this platform to go away, it's going to have an impact on their marketing and sort of their ability to reach their customers.
You mentioned influencers. I was interested in influencer marketing. Without TikTok, how might businesses look to market themselves instead? I know like other social media apps do still exist, but how might they look at it going forward?
I think that the answer is that things are going to get a little more difficult and they might get a little more lower tech for the near future. So one of the things that we're advising and that we're hearing from our businesses that we work with is that don't put all your eggs in one basket. It's a lot of work to manage a single social media account or even multiple social media accounts. It's even more work, but you're going to have to spread, you know, your presence over multiple platforms just in case one of them goes under. So having multiple channels to reach your audience, but also at the end of the day, you don't own your audience or the right to your audience on these platforms, right? If they go away, there's nothing you can take with you, really. Whereas if you develop your own in-house sort of marketing, like it's old school, but emails, newsletters, things like that, you keep those contacts and they really can't be taken away from you. So, you know, defaulting or at least falling back a little bit on in-house stuff like that, I think will also give you a little bit more safety. Last but not least, it's going to start to matter where these companies are located and who owns them. So you're going to have to do a little bit more research, like where is this company from? Like, is it a company in a country that the U.S. is or may eventually have a problem with? Because we've seen now that we have the ability and the wherewithal to shut a company down because of basically their nationality.
There's only a few days until the ban would take effect. So how can small business owners that utilize the app prepare?
First and foremost, you're going to want to learn about other platforms, like do your research. I think, you know, AI, ChatGPT can help you out here. They can give you a comparative analysis. But if you've been leaning heavily into TikTok, figure out what it is about TikTok that really, you know, has been a benefit to you and see what's close. All of them are going to have different algorithms. They're going to have different sort of cultures, different ways of engaging people. You spend the next 5 days to figure out what that is and then try and engage your TikTok audience now and tell them where you're going and push them to your new platform. I would also try to develop your in-house sort of email list, things like that, so that you can, you know, weather the next storm a little better. And last but not least, don't just put them all into one platform. Don't move from one platform to one platform. Diversify your platforms a little bit so that you have a little bit more coverage.
John Bittner is the executive director of the state's Small Business Development Center. He says the ban could hit Alaska businesses hard. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka high schoolers build storage sheds with local lumber.
It makes me feel like Sitka is more independent by using their own lumber instead of relying on other people's lumber.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at AlaskaMentalHealthTrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Fairbanks police have detained a suspect in connection with a fatal shooting outside a downtown bar early Wednesday morning after getting some help from an emergency dispatcher. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Police spokesperson Teal Soden said officers went to the Midnight Mine on Wendell Avenue after they got a report of a 911 call at around 3:15 a.m. from a person reporting he'd heard gunshots at the bar. When officers arrived, they found a man's body in the parking lot.
The victim is actually an employee of the bar. There were only two employees at the bar when this occurred, the victim who was in the parking lot and another employee who was inside.
Police identified the victim as 43-year-old Zachariah Hobbs of Fairbanks. Soden said officers detained the suspect this morning, soon after Fairbanks Emergency Communications Center dispatcher Brenda Geyer reported the 911 call.
The suspect that we arrested and is going to be charged with murder one is Derek McCormick Jr., and he's 21 years old.
Soden said it was McCormick who called 911 to report the shots fired. And she said Geyer became suspicious about the report while he was on the line and helped officers locate him.
The suspect was actually tracked after he called 911 and started providing our dispatcher with false information. She cued in on the fact that he was giving bad information and followed her gut feeling and thought she might have the shooter on the call.
Soden said police also got help from security personnel at the nearby Tanana Chiefs Conference office building who provided video.
It was really helpful to have people in the community just act quickly and come in and help us on this. And then, of course, our dispatcher who tracked the suspect by using his phone location.
Fairbanks police said in a news release issued this afternoon that the shooting may have been related to an incident in November when McCormick was in the Midnight Mine and making advances on the woman employee who was inside the bar when Hobbs was shot. Investigators say McCormick threatened Hobbs after he was ejected from the bar for harassing the woman on that November night. The news release says McCormick's being held at Fairbanks Correctional Center on the first-degree murder charge. The release says he was arraigned today and that bail is set at $2 million. An investigation into the case continues. For KUAC News, I'm Tim Ellis.
Human-fueled climate change is making natural disasters like floods and landslides in Alaska more common and destructive. While property owners can purchase federal flood insurance, they might be out of luck if a landslide inundates their home. One Southeast Alaska lawmaker has a proposal to offer a state flood insurance alternative that may include coverage for both floods and some landslides. KTOO's Clarice Larson reports.
Alaska State Senator Bert Stedman says the state needs to offer its own flood insurance alternative because the federal government's current policies are inadequate and expensive for many Alaskans.
They're getting ripped off by the federal government on flood insurance. They're getting an economic shotgun held to their head on how they can rebuild their properties. That's frankly unfair.
He proposed a bill that would create an Alaska Flood Authority to manage a state flood insurance fund. His aim is to provide more coverage at a lower cost to homeowners, as human-fueled climate change is making disasters like these a more frequent reality in Alaska. Stedman is a Republican who represents Southeast Alaska communities like Sitka and Wrangell that have experienced destructive or deadly landslides in recent years. So the bill's language includes mudflow as a type of flooding, which could mean certain landslides could fall under the proposed state coverage. His proposal comes after two large flood disasters last year in other parts of the state. Juneau experienced record-breaking flooding from a glacier outburst, and lower Kuskokwim River communities faced historic breakup flooding, inundating homes and community services. Stedman says the Alaska-specific flood insurance policy would be a cheaper alternative to the federal program because it would be tailored to insure just the state's floods, not the nation's.
The concern that we have is, you know, especially along the coast, you know, we're pushed into this federal flood insurance program, but the rates that they charge are excessive.
Most standard home insurance policies don't cover flood damage. Flood coverage is typically a separate addition. Pretty much the only place you'll be able to find that type of coverage is through the NFIP, or the National Flood Insurance Program. The federal government offers its own flood coverage because private insurers have historically shied away from it. In some coastal communities in Alaska, homeowners are required to have the additional flood coverage. And Stedman says that can get really expensive.
You know, there's a lot of problems with the federal flood insurance program. The first order of the day is to get the subject matter in front of the legislators and start educating them so they understand the premium ripoff that our citizens have been paying for decades.
The bill's language says the authority wouldn't be allowed to charge a rate that is, quote, excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory. and the rates would be determined based on historical flood and damage data. There's no fiscal note on the bill yet, but Stedman estimates it could cost the state several million dollars in seed money. Emil Mackey is an insurance agent in Juneau, and he knows his way around what policies are available for residents in Southeast Alaska. He's excited about some aspects of the bill, but has doubts that the rates of a state program would actually be lower.
What you have to understand is the National Flood Insurance Program is subsidized by the federal government. If we create this, the only way to do that is to also subsidize the program. And I just don't see the need.
But what he does see the need for is landslide insurance. The mudslide language in Stedman's bill is a start. Getting landslide insurance in the rainy and mountainous regions of Southeast Alaska is historically difficult. He chalks it up to the growing frequency of destructive landslides in the region and how that's changing the way insurers view risk.
Where the need is really for like landslide insurance, because we don't have any insurers in the state that do landslides, and I would like to see something like this.
Stedman says he hopes that landslides are a part of the discussion as the bill moves through the legislature, but they are not the main focus of the bill. The legislative session is set to begin next Tuesday. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Alaskans who've experienced stalking and domestic violence, or who work as police or correctional officers, aren't able to hide their addresses from the public, and that can put them and their families at risk. As KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports, an Alaska lawmaker is proposing a bill that would protect their personal information.
Senator Jesse Keel, a Juneau Democrat, pre-filed a bill which would allow victims of certain crimes and law enforcement officers to enroll in a program that gives them a P.O. box as a mailing address, keeping their home address confidential on public filings and other documents.
People who have escaped from violent situations, dangerous, abusive situations, absolutely have to have the ability to live a life in Alaska that includes things that create public records, right?
More than 40 states have similar programs, but Keel's bill includes correctional officers and police.
We just need to provide some protection to folks who are particularly at risk of violence.
The bill has been introduced twice before, but stalled out in committee before it could become law. It requires victims of crimes to have filed a protective order or to meet, quote, other standards set by the department. During the last legislative session, advocates for victims of violence and law enforcement officers testified in support of the bill. Susie Pearson is the former director of Abused Women's Aid in Crisis, or AWAKE, the largest domestic violence safe shelter in Alaska. Last year, she testified that a program like this protects everyone at the shelter, since domestic violence victims often use AWAKE as a mailing address for vital documents.
We feel that having a confidential address program would stop AWAKE from being a primary target of abusers that find out their victims are staying in or receiving mail at our shelter.
Pearson also says she hopes the bill could be expanded to include people who have not filed protective orders. Randy McLellan testified on behalf of the Alaska Correctional Officers Association when the bill was in the Senate Judiciary Committee last year. He said the bill would prevent people who wish officers harm from accessing their personal information.
We have about 950 correctional officers spread out through 12 different facilities across the state. And unfortunately, physical assault and threats of harm against correctional officers and their families is commonplace.
In previous years, the state has estimated the program would cost under $400,000 a year to operate. Keel says he believes that his fellow legislators will recognize its public safety value. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your coverage and saving options and enroll in a plan at healthcare.gov. The help is free, unbiased, and confidential. Language interpretation is available. Call 211 to connect to free local navigator assistance. For coverage starting January 1st, you must enroll by December 15th. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
The 2025 Kuskokwim 300 Sled Dog Race has been pushed back 2 weeks because of poor snowfall and looming above freezing temperatures, according to a release from the K300 Race Committee. The 300-mile race from Bethel upriver to Antioch and back will now start on Friday, February 7th. Race officials say that limited snowfall and unseasonably warm temperatures in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta throughout the winter have made it near impossible to check or mark trails. As of late Wednesday evening, no registered teams had dropped out of the race despite the reschedule. A two-week delay for the K300 is not uncommon. In its 46-year history, the race committee says it's been delayed several times due to extreme weather, usually for a day or two. And in 2021, the Kuskokwim 300 was delayed as part of COVID-19 mitigation plans. Meanwhile, Saxman residents are being asked to boil their water prior to drinking or cooking with it following a failure at the city's water plant. The boil water advisory was issued Tuesday for the town of about 400 people just south of Ketchikan. Saxman receives its water from a nearby mountain reservoir. It's then filtered at the city's treatment plant and held in a storage tank. The city said in a notice to residents that recent heavy rains and dirty raw water coming from the reservoir caused the treatment plant to go offline. Jamie Bjorkman oversees the region's drinking water program for the State Department of Environmental Conservation. She says because the plant was not producing treated water, the city's storage tank ran dry.
And in that event, they lost pressure in their distribution system, and that's where I come into play. Anytime there's a loss of pressure in a distribution system, we issue a boil water notice.
Officials say the boil water advisory could last for multiple weeks while they attempt to get the new filtration system back online. Saxman was under a boil water notice for just over a week last month due to the installation of a new filtration system. Bjorkman says drinking the untreated water likely won't cause serious harm, but it can upset your stomach.
Drinking water that hasn't been adequately treated can result in things like gastrointestinal issues. You can have, cramps, nausea, headaches, other symptoms like that.
The city says they're monitoring the pipes for any leaks and working to get the plant up and running. In the meantime, the Organized Village of Saxman, the community's tribal organization, is delivering bottled water to residents. Sitka's Land Trust cottages use a state-of-the-art model to create affordability. And now a high school construction class is using old-world skills to improve the neighborhood. Students are building storage sheds for every home using locally sourced lumber. KCAW's Robert Woolsey stopped by Sitka's Career and Technical Education Workshop to talk with the student carpenters and the adults who put the project together and sent this audio postcard.
Building sheds for those houses that were recently built. And so this is all funded by a grant, I'm pretty sure, from the Land Trust, all this material that we're using. And then so they give us the materials and we just give them a finished product.
How's it been working with locally milled lumber?
I feel like it makes me feel like Sitka is more independent by using their own lumber instead of relying on other people's lumber. And it's just a little harder to work with because it's all rough cut, so it's not straight. So we have to make the cut straight and make everything flat and plumb and flush.
The Alaska Community Foundation gave the grant. It was for $45,000. And it was for 3 semesters of work, which will wrap up in May. And there's a possibility that we can re-upped in order to get a total of 14 little sheds for the neighborhood. The Alaska Community Foundation has a local branch, the Sitka Legacy Foundation, and this is just the largest and most interesting of the projects that we've funded through them.
It's a very small footprint. It's the size of a sheet of plywood, 4x8, and really the intention is just those homes are so tight to give those folks a chance to put their Costco totes and their crab pots and their strollers and their bikes up out of the rain outside. So we were able to kind of come up with an architectural design on the outside that allowed us to use some of the spruce lap siding that was milled in Tenneke by Gordon Chu, and then put a little flavor on top of that with some good old Sitka 211 that gave us kind of that vertical batten look.
What grade are you in?
Sophomore.
What do you think your educational plans are for the next couple of years and then beyond?
I'll just try to take these classes throughout high school and then college. I'm going to try to do some type of construction management program or business.
Has working with Tongass Lumber had any sort of impact on you. Would you like to use this material more in the future?
Yes and no. It's definitely cool to be using the wood, but like lumber that you buy from the store is definitely a little nicer. It's like not as twisted, and it's just easier to cut and easier to work with.
You know, I've worked with yellow cedar locally milled. I've worked with alder. The spruce that Gordon does really is a good product. It's really very stable. It's really very predictable. It's something that I can have success with students. We're interested in seeing, you know, Gordon and his son continue to produce product and other mills in the region try to replicate what we got there.
This project's worked really well for us because it's helping us figure out what we can use our local timber resource for, what the opportunities are and what the constraints are for sourcing local lumber. And we're training youth to be on career pathways to do construction work. And we need a lot of workers in Sitka to do construction work, and there's a dearth of those. So putting them through this program and that they're either going into the workforce or able to work on their own homes is a real good thing for us.
Vance Bolovich.
And Vance, your family is in the construction business, correct?
Yes, my dad owns CVC Construction.
Colton McGraw.
McGraw is a familiar name in the construction industry here. What's your place in the McGraw?
Chris McGraw is my dad. Chuck McGraw is my grandpa. He owns MCG Constructors.
Okay. Yeah. And are you thinking about getting into the construction team?
I am, yes.
Do you want to be part of the hands-on construction?
I want to be a part of probably both, honestly, like part of the family business, and then I also want to work in the field as well.
One of the fun things from this semester, I had a lot of names in there that are synonymous with construction in Sitka. Bolovich, McGraw, Martins, a lot of sons of contractors who work professionally. And, you know, it's fun to work with that crew because it was obvious that they've worked their whole life. I didn't have to teach them how to work. I just had to teach them the basics of carpentry and construction. And they were eager to go to work and apply those skills. But we kind of dangled a free breakfast at the Nugget in front of them in the last month. And it came down to the very last day. And I said, the land trust is buying breakfast at the Nugget if you guys can get this thing wrapped up. And, you know, at the end of the semester, kids kind of finish up in other classes. They've taken their finals. They've got a day or two where they're just kind of killing until the semester ends. And Vance Bolovich was down every class period for the last 2 days of the semester, making sure that his shed got finished so that we could get to the Nugget and have our breakfast.
Are you thinking about a career in construction?
It's a second choice. My first choice is to go to college and then dental school and then be a dentist.
That was KCAW's Robert Woolsey with an audio postcard from Sitka's Career and Technical Education class with the voices of students Vance Bolovich and Colton McGraw, teacher Mike Vieira, Sitka Community Land Trust Director Randy Huey, and Sitka Conservation Society Director Andrew Tomes. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Ava White in Anchorage, Tim Allison, Delta Junction, Yvonne Crumery and Clarice Larson in Juneau, Sage Smiley in Bethel, Jack Darrell in Ketchikan, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky's our producer. And I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
GCI. Keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.
Right now. The Funk Soul Brother, check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother, right about now. The Funk Soul Brother, check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother, right about now. The Funk Soul Brother, check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother, right about now. The Funk Soul Brother, right about now.
Touching you. with a little love and some tenderness. We'll walk upon the water, we'll rise above the mist, with a little peace and some harmony. We'll take the world together, we'll take them by the hand. 'Cause I got a hand for you. Oh, I wanna run with you. Yesterday I saw you standing there. Your hair was down, your eyes were red. No comb, I touched your hair. I said, get up.
this empty street on the boulevard of broken dreams, where the city sleeps and I'm the only one who walks up. My shadow's the only one who walks beside me. My shallow heart's the only thing that's beating. Sometimes I wish someone out there will find me.
Choice I made, ooh, oh, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. never been so sure about anything before. But this love I'm feeling gonna be a feeling I feel forevermore. Looking in your eyes, tomorrow's all I see. Long as there's forever, baby,